We have, it's very class. I heard very many years ago from Rabbi Noach Weinberg, who was the founder of Esh HaTorah, and who has a beautiful way of putting things, old concepts in modern language. He was a tremendously good communicator, and also a very good salesman. If you want to hire someone as a salesman, he was the best salesman. And in fact, when you read his biography, you'll find out that he was a salesman. That was his job. He was a salesman when he was a young boy, traveling around the United States. And that's when he saw how badly something was needed for the Jewish population, especially for the young people. There were no organizations for college kids, outreach organizations. So he decided he's going to do it. No one's going to do it. He's going to do it. He has to do it. So he started Esh HaTorah in Yerushalayim. And it's right there, across from the Kotel. It's got the best location. Beautiful building. A lot of people from around the world come and study with him. So he has a class on five levels of happiness. There are five levels of happiness. Very, very important class. And you're the lucky ones who are going to hear it today, because it's such an important class. So the question we have is, this is the question the Kabbalists ask, Rav Arizal and others ask, why did Hashem create the world? Why did Hashem create the world? And there are at least four or five different answers the Kabbalists give. But one reason was to give of His goodness. That is a very interesting concept. And that is, one of the higher levels of pleasure is giving. Which people, you know, it's very hard to get to that point. Because a lot of people think the pleasure is to take. Very few people feel the pleasure of giving. It's like when you have a guest and you're giving, people get pleasure out of having guests. But it's an acquired taste. So it really is an acquired taste of giving. You're helping people. It's very painful because you've got to give of yourself. But there's a certain pleasure you get, a fulfillment of giving. So a person has to have a taste of giving to appreciate what giving is all about. So one of the traits of Hashem is He's a giver. Hashem is a giver. Not only is a giver, He is a hanun. What is hanun? Gracious. What does that mean? Altruistic. Nothing in return. I don't want anything in return from you. I just want to give. My pleasure is to give. I have no intention of taking anything in return. So that's one of the reasons the Kabbalists give for the creation of the world is Hashem. He doesn't need, but He wanted to give. So He created beings that He can just give to. Pure give. Giving, 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 giving. Can you imagine? It's like a parent. Just keep on giving. Keep on giving. So you bring a child into this world, and you expect, you know, hopefully the child's going to grow up and move away, right? That's it, right? It doesn't end there, right? Just got to keep on going.
But you know, Rabbi, you expect the child to call you every now and then.
Yeah, but not to take. You know, maybe he can give you. Dad, you gave me so much when I was a kid. Here, I want to pay you back a little bit.
Hashem wants to give from us.
Exactly. He wants to give, and He wants us to learn how to give. And that's why He created children helpless, because He wants the parents to learn how to give. If you can't learn how to give, you can't get married. If you can't learn how to give, you can't have children. If you can't learn how to give, you can't only have friends. What does the Mishnah say in Pirkei Avot? How do you acquire a friend? You have to acquire a friend. Asel lecha rav, making a rabbi is very easy. You're my rabbi. But a friend, you have to invest in. To make someone your friend, you have to give, 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 and hopefully you'll get back as well. It's a give-and-take relationship. And marriage is a give-take relationship. If you're just in it to take, it's not going to last long. Same thing with having children. It's all about giving, giving, giving. Why? Hashem says, I want you to become like me. We have to become like our Creator. Give us. So give us. V'natnu ish kofer nafsho. By the Machzir Shekel, the Torah says, V'natnu ish kofer nafsho, and you will give. V'natnu. Now it's interesting, the word V'natnu goes backwards and forwards. It's the same. Vav, nun, taf, nun, vav. Vav, nun, taf, vav, nun, taf, nun, vav. You can go backwards and forwards. V'natnu, and you give, Hashem says you get back. So you may not get back exactly what you give. You may get back something else, intangible. You get a feeling back of accomplishment, of being good, of being godly. That's the feeling a person gets when they give. It's very hard to be a giver. It's very hard. And usually what happens is the people you give to make it even harder. That's the trouble. They're not happy what you gave. They want more. They don't look happy. And it happens with children as well. Give, 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 and then they're not even grateful. It's ironic, right? It's ironic. Then they turn on you. Oh, that's the worst, right? And we do this to Hashem. We turn on our Creator. People turn on their Creator. horrible. He gave and he created them, and they turn on him. Bah. But that's God's mercy. That's why you need mercy as well. It's not just enough to be hanun. You have to have the other traits as well. Okay, erech apayim, slow to anger. So anyway, that's one of the reasons the Kabbalists give is Hashem is a giver. Another different difference in how we explain things is that God is not this awesome, fearsome, big judge which we imagine on Rosh Hashanah. Right? God is not really a judge and saying, look, I want you to do this or else. Say, listen, I gave you so much. I want an accounting. Where did it all go? That's what Rosh Hashanah is all about. I gave. Now what I want from you is a little bit of a accounting. Like, what do you do with all I gave you? That's what Rosh Hashanah is all about, is the accounting process. I just want to know what you did with it. I love giving. I just want to make sure you did something purposeful with what I gave you. What do you do with the life I gave you? What do you do with the children I gave you? What do you do with the money I gave you? That's the accounting process on Rosh Hashanah. And that's what the Torah. The Torah is not just the rules. You have to do this and have to do that. What people think? People think the Torah is just rules. It's a rule book. It's not. It's an instruction code. You know, when you buy something, it always comes. You buy an electronic device, you buy an electrical device. It always comes with a book of instructions. Today you won't even get it. It tells you, look on this website. They don't even bother. But if you don't read the instructions, you'll probably won't know exactly how it works and how to work it the best. So you buy a new dishwasher and it comes with a instruction book, a manual. Say, who needs rules? Throw it out. But then you look, how do I work this thing? It's not working properly. Well, you didn't read the instruction book. The Torah is not a rule book. It's an instruction guide, a manual for living. If you want to know how to make the most of your life, the Torah is a manual for living. It's a manual. It should change the words to manual for living in this world. The Torah is a manual for living in this world. And without that manual, a person will go crazy. We see people going crazy around us. Right? Because they have no manual to live by. There's no, well, I don't want to say rules, but advice. There's no advice to live by. So one of the issues which the Torah is not explicit about is the different levels of pleasure and happiness that a person has in this world. Opportunities for pleasure and happiness in this world. What are the different levels of pleasure in this world? So number one, which is the lowest level of pleasure. This is what everyone thinks is pleasure, physical pleasure. That's the lowest level of pleasure. It's the most basic, it's the most available, and it's one which a person can partake of with all five senses. A person can partake of with all five senses, enjoy, you smell it, perfume, right? You go into Macy's, first thing you smell it is perfume. Not just Macy's, any department store. Why? They want to attract you. So put nice smells. See, you make the bracha. You can say a bracha. Why? Because it has a source. A smell which has no source, you can't say a bracha. The smell, you can see the source. It's in the bottle somewhere. The bottle's right there in front of you. You can say a bracha. So five senses. Smell it, perfume. A rose, a flower, you can touch it, you can hear the music, you can see it, art, beauty. Any experience which you invest, one of your five senses, you feel something nice, you feel a nice velvet, right? So it's a sense. Some kids love to touch, and there's a museum in Philadelphia, one of my favorite museums, my kids were small, Please Touch Museum. Mm-hmm. You go there and they can touch it and feel it. Thousands of experiences of this world fall into this category of physical pleasure. Thousands of experiences. We all know eating is one of the big ones, right? Drinking. Seeing beautiful sights. See a beautiful day. Gorgeous day outside. Nature, we don't appreciate enough. We have to appreciate nature. Air conditioning in the summer. Heating in the winter. A new car. A hot shower. Delicious food. All these are pleasures. They're all part of the lowest level of pleasure, which is physical pleasure. So we have to understand, physical pleasure is the lowest level of pleasure. It's hard to even think about it. That's the lowest. So what's the highest? Wow. If that's the lowest, what's the highest? So most people just get stuck in this lowest level of pleasure. Most people in the world are stuck on number one. Physical pleasure. I want more, and it's not enough, and I want more, and I want more, and I want more, and more. There's no end to it. We know that the ancient Greeks and Romans would put a skull, the Epicureans would put a skull on the shelf and say, let's eat because tomorrow we die. Let's enjoy as much as we can, because that's what this world's all about. That's what they figured the whole world's all about, pleasure, and therefore we have to enjoy ourselves as much as we can. And therefore they would eat, vomit it out, eat, vomit it out, eat, vomit it out, as much as they could stuff themselves with. There's a restaurant around the corner, right? Route 18. I don't know if it's still going. Stuff your face. Is it still going? I don't know. I don't drive down there anymore. I'm just saying, but I saw the sign. Stuff your face. But that's the mentality. Stuff it. The mentality is, let's enjoy, stuff ourselves with enjoyment. Stuff your face. It's a good name for a restaurant.
Yeah.
For Americans, it's a great name for a restaurant. Stuff your face. So that's physical enjoyment. It's the lowest level pleasure. We're a little different, you know. When Christianity started out, they said the fifth class pleasure is dirty and for the weak, for the sinners. So a monk has got to abstain from all these pleasures. Not allowed to get married. Can't have pleasure. Chasvei shalom, he has pleasure. He's not allowed to eat good food. Chasvei shalom, he has to wear sackcloth. Oi, prickly, bristles all over. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's my theory why there was one in a bad mood. The monks were always in a bad mood. Nothing good to eat. Can't get married. I'm stuck with this sackcloth. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's rough.
Nazir is similar.
Nazir, no. Nazir could eat everything except for drink wine. He couldn't drink wine. He could wear nice clothes. He didn't grow his hair. He could grow his hair. He could get married. He had to get married. Everyone got married. So it was no restriction in Nazir. It's interesting. Interesting. The restriction is very minimal. In fact, the Nazir shouldn't go to graveyards. I have nothing wrong with that, you know. It's very depressing. He shouldn't get depressed. So that's what they decide. They decide, you know, the highest level of living is don't get married. The highest level of living is don't get involved in the physical world. Abstain from everything physical. Judaism says that's not God's way. The high priest on Yom Kippur has to be married. Rabbi Huda goes even further. He says maybe his wife will die. Make him marry a backup wife. You should have two wives just in case. Three wives, four wives, five wives. The Gemara says, Ele davar sof. It's too much. Anyway, the halacha is not like him.
Probably why there's so much child abuse with the
Okay, I didn't want to say it. Okay, let's not go that way, because this is broadcast live all over the world. Okay. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nivra. Ah, pleasure. Fifth level pleasure. Lowest level pleasure. Okay. The Jewish way is God does not want to frustrate us. Everything is allowed, just got to find it. It's allowed in a certain way, right? You want to have relations, get married. Kosher way, it's a kosher relationship. Kiddushin, holiness. It's not only kosher, it's kodesh. The Ramban says it's the highest level act a human being can engage in, and that's why rabbis had marital relations on Friday night, Shabbat. The holiest day for the holiest act. It's amazing. Why? It's an act of, it's not pleasure, it's creation. So that's the idea. Creation is the highest level act and should be done with holiness. It's a holy act. Pur revu, but it's a holy act, which is, unfortunately today, the enjoyment has been taken away from the procreation aspect. So you don't want to procreate, you want to enjoy. People forget what it's for, really. That's the idea. But Hashem is not here to frustrate us. He wants us to enjoy his beautiful world, but don't get lost in that lowest level pleasure, because then you won't appreciate the high level pleasure. Hashem says, listen, this is a pleasure. I'm giving you all these pleasures. Can you imagine? You have to eat, right? I'll make it pleasurable for you. Wow, what a chesed. Can you imagine? A person eats, they could be like snakes eating dust. I don't know how the snake has had pleasure from that. How much pleasure can you get from eating dust? Disgusting. But can you imagine? Hashem made us have, not only that, it looks good. Look at the packaging. Look at all the fruits, how they're packaged for us. $1 billion industry packaging. And here these fruits grow on the trees, and they're packaged so beautifully. It's amazing. And they're good, and they're appetizing, and they're healthy. So we have to eat. And not only did God say you have to eat, but you have to. Look, I'm going to give you something pleasurable to eat. It's not just you have to eat, but it's pleasurable to eat. Ah, that's great. So that's the problem. The problem is we forget that we think this is the main pleasure. This is the main pleasure in life. There are people who make their whole lives revolve around this pleasure. So now I'm working, and what am I looking forward to? I'm looking for lunch. Where am I going to go to lunch? Where are we going to bring lunch from? Who are we going to call to bring the lunch? What am I going to have for lunch? That's the pleasure a person looks forward to. So the mistake the Western world makes is, this is it. This pleasure is, that's all the pleasure there is in the world. That's what the Greeks believed. That's what the Romans believed. We can't get enough of this pleasure. Physical pleasure is, that's it. That's all there is. It's like you go to someone's house and they give you a little piece of melon as an appetizer. You say, wow, this is great. That's it. Oh, and the person says, can I have another piece? Can I have another piece? Can I have another piece? You say, hold on. This is just appetizer. Don't get lost in the appetizer. So a person comes into this world and he thinks, that's it. So he's going to get lost in this. What a fantastic melon. I say, you're nuts. There's another course. That's not it. Similarly, when a person gets lost in this fifth level pleasure, this lowest level pleasure, they forget there's other things which are more important. So that is a very important rule. That's something which we have to explain to our children. Have pleasure, but don't just settle for potato chips. Right? There's some heavy-duty pleasures out there. Right? Well, on the one side, we're not ascetics. Baruch Hashem, we're not ascetics. On the other side, we're not. The Western world mind is have as much as you can and amass and put focus on your life. It's all about pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. In truth, real pleasure ends at the age of 8. I didn't want to break this to you. But after this, there are responsibilities. That's when, you know, when the people happiest, the children. Children are the happiest bits around. They have no responsibilities. It's when you throw in the responsibilities that the little bit of the pleasure goes away. So even when you're eating and you're thinking about the responsibilities, oh gosh, I've got this chore to do, hopefully. And it's very important to teach your children, give them chores. Otherwise they grow up with nothing. No responsibilities, they're totally useless. They grow up totally useless, unfortunately. There are two skills in life a person must learn to milk this pleasure and to be happy with the pleasure. A person has to learn these skills. Number one is gratitude. A person who's not grateful for it will never appreciate it. A person not grateful will not appreciate it. So appreciation. A person has to learn the skill to maximize the pleasure of getting. You go into a wine tasting course. Can you imagine? There are 16 different parts of the mouth. Some people just gulp it down. Wrong. You're not really enjoying it. You've got to enjoy it. You've got to flavor it. You've got to smell it. It's
aren't
a whole.
You supposed to gulp it down when you make kiddush?
Pardon?
When you make kiddush, aren't you supposed to gulp it down?
A cheekful. That's it. Your yotze, the first cheekful. Cheekful, that's all you need for kiddush. Cheekful, you don't have to gulp. If you want to say bracha achrona, for calling this Friday.
Most people do rov kos, I thought.
No, rov kos only on Pesach. Rov kos is Pesach. On kiddush, regular kiddush, it's just malay lugma, a cheekful. It's very small amount. To be yotze kiddush. Very, very small amount. So it's nothing. So a cheekful, you can start swirling around your mouth. You can start tasting the wine. It's a cheekful. That's all it is. So there's more to wine than just liquid that wets the mouth. There's 16 parts. Listen, you have to go to wine. What's it called? The sommeliers. It's a French word, sommelier. Sommelier is a person who's an expert on wine. And they go and they don't even drink the stuff. They just swirl around the mouth and spit it out again. Otherwise, they'd all get drunk. They'll go there tasting wine. It's an art. Tasting wine, yeah, very well paid. What a good job for a Jewish child, a Jewish kid, except the problem is the wine is not kosher. And so he's spitting it out anyway. Not incentive to spit it out. It's not kosher.
Or whatever it's called.
Yes, we have this guy every year. He comes. He's one of the happiest guys I know. His whole day is tasting wine. So number one is you have to be aware of appreciation. You have to know how to appreciate. So when eating food, also a person should taste it and savor it. Rambam says halacha. Chew it how many times? 32 times. 32 times. Each mouthful, 32. Can you imagine, we chewed our food, if I did at least, chew our food 32, it'd probably be healthier. It'd probably be less fat. Because it takes a while for the brain to get the message that the stomach is full. The doc says like takes 15 minutes or whatever it is. There's a lag. So a person's eating, they don't feel full.
Right.
But a stomach, I have a daughter who's very, very slow eater, and she's very skinny. I don't know why. And the answer is very simple. Her brain caught up to her stomach. So she feels full even when she's eating. So we have to appreciate it, and we have to appreciate life. That's the first skill. The first skill is you have to appreciate life. You have to appreciate what we get. Number two, the second skill You have to watch out for, and this is a very, very important point, counterfeit pleasure. Counterfeit pleasure. Everything we have, there's a counterfeit pleasure, just like today. You want to buy an iPhone, you better watch out, because there's a lot of counterfeit iPhones out there. Even apps today, I was listening on the iPage, whatever, on the iStore. Some of the apps are counterfeit apps. Everything's counterfeit today. It's a big thing. Counterfeit software, everything's counterfeit. You go to New York, you find all these Rolex watches being sold for $10. Right? You know what that means? Exactly. Look good. They look good. Imitations. All imitations. So counterfeit pleasure is, come to me, invest your time with me, I'll show you a good time. It's just sawdust. It doesn't pay. It's terrible because a person can invest their life in all these counterfeits. A person can invest their life in these counterfeits and pleasure which doesn't get them anywhere, unfortunately. And there's millions and millions of people running after these counterfeit pleasures in life today. And come, enjoy yourself with me, I'll give you a good time. And the person comes after them and say, I just wasted so much time, so much effort, so much energy, so much money, and I didn't get any lasting pleasure. There's no lasting pleasure. So you waste your time, energy, resources, and you've come out feeling empty. That's counterfeit pleasure. That's how a person knows it's counterfeit pleasure. You come out feeling empty. And unfortunately, people don't realize that it's just low-level pleasure. That's low-level pleasure. You invest yourself in low-level pleasure, there's no lasting benefit. Right? How long does a person get pleasure from eating? We've got beautiful chocolate cake downstairs. Wow. You know, it's such a gorgeous try. Still down. I think there's still a plate left. Wow. So much pleasure. You know, all that really good chocolate. Oh, it's really mouth-watering. But how long does it last? Once it passes down your gullet, it's gone. What a shame. You have to relive it. Maybe you just pretend, dream about it. You get more pleasure dreaming about it than eating it. It's like... So you have to watch out for counterfeits. So what is the number one counterfeit to pleasure? And the answer is, let's ask, let's go around. What is the number one counterfeit pleasure? What pleasure don't you really get anything out of it? And the answer is comfort. Comfort is the number one counterfeit pleasure. Let's talk about this. When you ask people, what is pleasure? They'll tell you it's the opposite of pain. What is pleasure? The opposite of pain. And therefore they think, if I'm not in pain, pleasure. The definition of a pleasure, like today. If someone didn't do anything bad, they must be a good person. Is that right or wrong? Huh? It's wrong. Well, it's half good. He didn't do bad. Sur Meira, Shlomo HaMelech says, but the next part is, Va'aseh Tov. To be good, you've got to have two parts. One part is don't do bad, and the other part is do good. So to say pleasure is the absence of pain, wrong. It's absence of pain is neutral. Right?
What?
Neutral. It's neither here nor there. Neutral. Sorry, my English is not American. Sorry, I apologize. But I'm caught in the middle of two worlds. So if I go to England, they say I'm American. If I come to America, they say I'm British. So you just can't get away with it. What would you say if I asked you what is pleasure? Most people say the opposite of pain. What is the opposite of pain? Comfort. Comfort is pleasure. No pain, no gain. We say it, no pain, no gain. You don't get anything out of it. And this really throws us off. So no pain is neutral. No burdens and no responsibilities. That's not pleasure, it's neutral. Neutrality in life is not pleasure. Neutrality in life is not goodness. It's just nothing. A child is born neutral. A child's not born bad, that's Christianity. A child is not born good, that's not Judaism. A child is born, nothing, zero. He's in the middle of there. Now he's got to do. He's got to do good and keep away from bad to be considered good. Yes?
I thought a child was born with Pizza Hara.
What's that got to do with it? Is that good or bad? Is he born good or bad? I'm talking about in terms of...
I heard all children are born good.
That is the biggest mistake society makes today. Children are born good, wrong. They're born neutral. They didn't do anything yet. How can you be good without doing anything? The fact is, if you look at it, you'll say they already troubled their mothers. So they're born with that on their... That's a heavy weight, right? You trouble your mother. People don't realize. Oy. Have to give lectures to the kids, right? Don't trouble your parents. That's the worst thing you can do. But listen, the mother, for the mother, it's a pleasure, right? I'm sure you agree. Especially a month later. You can say really, oh, it's a pleasure having a child, right? So, so by thinking pleasure is comfort, we rob ourselves of true pleasure. The Gemara says, "Kafum tzara agra." The more effort, the more trouble, the more pleasure, the more gain. If you strive for comfort, a situation where there's no effort involved, you are buying no pain, but robbing yourself of pleasure. If you want pleasure, you have to make an effort. Boy, that's an amazing concept. I was just reading yesterday a book. It's written by one of our congregants, Dr. Fishbane. He's a Jewish studies professor at NYU. He wrote a book about the son of the Rambam, Rabbi Abraham. Not so well known, Rabbi Abraham, the son of Rambam, and the Rambam's only child. Can you imagine? The Rambam's only child. He was 48 years old when he had this boy, 48 years old. And Rambam suffered a lot. He traveled around the world, exile from here, exile from there. And then his brother who supported him, David, dies, and he has to support his brother's wife and a child. And then, Baruch Hashem, he found a wife. His first wife dies, second wife, and he has this child at the age of 48. And he invested all his energies, whatever energy he had at that time, in this child, Abraham, who did not let him down. And he loved this child so much. And he says, the two biggest joys in my life are, guess, I just gave one away. Yeah. Studying Torah, very good. And my child. Beautiful. Both these things require tremendous amounts of effort. My biggest pleasures in life are linked to the effort you put into it. That's an amazing concept. So in other words, if something is there with no effort, there's not much pleasure. The more effort you put into it, the more pleasure you get out of it. That's an amazing concept.
Yeah.
He wrote a book, but it wasn't translated. Unfortunately, his son wrote a sefer, and the most famous sefer he wrote was not translated. It was written into Arabic, and they didn't translate it. Only parts are translated. So I can't remember the name of it, but it's not really available, the book of the Rambam. But he did write one commentary on the Ein Yaakov, which is famous.
Yes.
On the Ein Yaakov, his commentary on Ein Yaakov, which is the stories of the Talmud.
Yeah.
Yes. Very good.
And the reality is, if you really love somebody, you better be willing to feel pain. And that's
the yeah, unfortunately.
Joy.
That's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, right?
It's like
yeah,
pain
you're
and
right, 100%.
Joy go like
exactly,
this.
Exactly, 100%. I agree with you, 100%. And that's what we're saying. No effort, so part of the effort is the pain, unfortunately. Part of the effort you put in is the pain and the suffering of raising a child. And then hopefully when it's like being a gardener. You dig up the earth. There's so much pain involved in being a gardener, you know. I don't have a green thumb. It's all still white. But my mother has a green thumb. She's fantastic, amazing. She can make everything grow. I don't know how she does it. It's a very good hobby. Growing things in the yard. And it's a very, very good hobby. And a very fruitful one. But you got to suffer the pain of going through it. The motions. It's a very hard job. You're digging. And you're in the sun and the heat. And especially in Israel. And digging. And, Hazorim b'dima. Very good. David HaMelech. Shir HaMelech. Zorim Badima, those who sow with tears will reap with joy. That's what child raising is all about. Child raising is sowing with tears. If you're sowing with tears, and you know what? The child you put the most tears in, that's the child that's going to surprise you one day, hopefully. Usually that's the case.
How could a baby be one new joy? You hear such terrible stories.
Because the child didn't do anything yet. He didn't do anything.
Right, so then if you read these stories where the parents abuse their children and all that.
The child is born neutral. I'm not about the parents. Parents are evil. The child is neutral.
The child
didn't do anything. The parents may be evil. They're abusers, whatever, they're evil. But the child, what do you do? The child is neutral. The child's biggest test is not to copy them. That's the trouble. Not to be so hard. Okay, so this is a great story. And this is Rabbi Weinberg. He says, once he asked a girl in the audience, "What is your parents' biggest joy?" And she stood up and she said, "Me." And then he said, "And what is your parents' biggest pain?" And she said, "My brother." Freedom.
Very humble.
Very good. Smart girl. Yeah.
I just read also something. Rabbi Weinberg used to ask parents, like non-religious parents, what's your biggest joy? They said their children. So they said, "Well, how come you're going to have a dozen or whatever?" And then but that was the idea.
Yes. Not too much pleasure. Okay. So America tells us, you want pleasure, go for comfort. 85 degrees, dry heat, sitting on the sand, on the beach, with your favorite drink full of ice, with a straw, and it's the moment before you sleep. Because if you sleep, you don't feel any pleasure. So just before you sleep, you're in that relaxed state. America says that's pleasure. That is the highest level of pleasure. That's what everyone wants. They want to go to the Bahamas, lie on the beach, that glass over there, just drift in and out of consciousness, right? That's what people imagine. That's their pleasure. What do you? People, they save up all the year for their every vacation. That's their pleasure. Their pleasure is that 1 week in the sand. Pleasure. Try doing that for 3 weeks and you're going to go crazy. Try doing that for 2 months and it's going to be hell. It doesn't really pay. That's comfort. And that's a counterfeit. And there's counterfeits in every category of pleasure. So comfort means you retreat from the world. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of people do in retirement. And that's the biggest danger. Because they're not growing. If they're not growing, they're not growing. They're getting older. That's what old age is not growing. Old age is not growing. Old age is not achieving. That's what old age is. So a person who's old and still achieving is not old. They're still dynamic. They're still learning. They're still growing. When a person stops striving for everything, retreats from the world, it's not pleasure. There's no effort, so there can't be pleasure. Because pleasure entails effort. That's so hard. Why? Why? Why did God do that to us? Why did God create pleasure with effort? The more effort, the more reward. The more effort, the more reward.
You take it for granted otherwise.
Pardon?
You take it for granted otherwise.
I guess. You don't feel purposeful, which we have to talk about. We didn't get there. That's a high level of pleasure. And that's something we have to talk about. So there are five levels of pleasure. But each level is, you cannot even consider it with a lower level below. The lower level, qualitatively, it's so way different from the other level that you can't even put in the same category. There is no exchange rate. One moment of the next level of pleasure is worth more than the whole world of the previous pleasures. Psh, so wild. So what can be the next pleasure? So the lowest level of pleasure is physical pleasure. What's the next level of pleasure? I gave it away already. What's the next level of pleasure? Children! Next level of pleasure. What pleasure do you get? Oy. Love. You can't get love from inanimate objects. The computer wakes up in the morning and says, I love you. You know, today you have this Siri, right? And you train her. You can say, every time you put on your phone, I love you, whatever your name is. Isn't that great? I think you're cute. I think you're smart. Isn't that great? You open your phone and start saying to you, I think you're smart. I think you're cute. I think you're bright. I think you're great. Only problem is, it's only our computer. It's not a real person. Ay, ay, ay.
There was a movie like that, Her or something, wasn't it?
I don't know. You go and get me on that one.
I think that's what it was called, Her.
So, children, second level of pleasure. First level, lowest level is... can start from both sides. So the lowest level of pleasure is physical pleasure. The second level of pleasure is love. Which is amazing, amazing. The Beatles made the smartest song they made was Money Can't Buy You Love. Money cannot buy you love. Persons have all the money in the world and they think people love them because they give them the money. They don't really love them. They view them as a tool. They view them as a source. They don't really love them. For example, would you sell your child? Don't answer that. For all the money in the world, would you sell your child? And the answer is no, of course not. Not for sale. 1 second. The pleasure is through money. All the fifth level pleasure, the lowest level pleasure is through money. So if I give you all the money in the world, you can have all the food you want, all the clothing you want, all the shoes you want for your child. Would you take it? No, my child's not for sale. Why is that? And the answer is because this second level pleasure is qualitatively way above the first level of pleasure. I want, for all the money in the world, you can't have it. Is that amazing? Think about it. It's amazing. We don't think about it. We go through it every day. We live a life every day. We don't think about it. This second level of pleasure, I wouldn't sell for all the money in the world. I wouldn't sell my husband or wife for all the money in the world. Abraham Avinu in Mitzrayim. Except for Pikuach Nefesh. It's an amazing concept. No amount of money or physical pleasure can buy a kid. Money can't buy you love. What is love? So Rambam says, amazing concepts. He defines the concept of love in the Mishneh Torah. Love is an emotional pleasure a human being has when they understand and appreciate what's beautiful in another human being. It's not the fake Hollywood love. Fake Hollywood love is not Jewish love. Why not? What is Hollywood love? Let me explain to you. Anyone over here love apples? You love apples, Rachel? What do you do with them? How do you show your love to the apple? How do you express your love to the apple? By eating it. What does that mean? You don't really love the apple. You love yourself. So that's Hollywood love. Hollywood love is when a person in America says, I love such and such thing, what does it mean is, I love myself and I want it. Love is want. It's not love. It's wanting. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Apple tree in my front yard. There you go. Take care of it.
It's good. So you love it.
More than just eat the apples.
Do you love salmon? Who loves salmon? I love salmon. But you know what? That's not love. That's wanting. I love myself and I want. And that's the trouble with the word love today. It's misused as want. Instead of saying I want it, people say I love it. That's a big trouble. Big problem. That's a big problem. That is a big problem. We mistranslate the word love. And so Rambam says a beautiful concept. Love is the emotional pleasure human being has when they understand and appreciate what's beautiful in another human being. If you could understand to do that, the pleasure involved is so great, more than all the physical pleasure of the world. Imagine, you look at that child and say, oh, I love that child. I love his acts. I love the way he acts. I like the way he talks. I like the way his emotions. I like the way he's so well balanced. I wish. And I go on and go on. Because the truth is, the child is part of you. Your child is your child. It's your child is you. Half of you is walking around that child. So of course you love yourself. Hopefully you love the child as well. But you love the child. So it's appreciating the emotional. It's the emotional pleasure a person gets by appreciating other people. If you love your spouse, it's the emotional pleasure you get by appreciating their personality, who they are. In reality, there's a lot you have to give to appreciate it.
May I ask a question?
Go ahead, please.
What about the woman who surrenders a child for adoption?
Yes.
Because she knows she can't care for the child. Wouldn't that fit into your category?
No, because she loves the child so much, she's willing to give it up so the child can have a better life.
Yes.
That's love. It's a give. It's a kind of give. Yes, yes, exactly what you said. Sorry. So, yes. Exactly. So if you're giving it up for the sake of the child, it's not for your sake. I don't want the money. It's not the money. It's because the child has nothing to live for with me. What am I going to give the child? But the truth is, even that is a misnomer. Why? Because the mother can give love to the child that no one else can give. It's, you know, in Israel, there's a whole big ruckus still going on about the Yemenite children. Still going on. The Yemenite children brought into Israel, a lot of them were kidnapped and given away to different families. And the parents who had nothing, literally nothing, there are no accounts were they willing to give their child away. No accounts. They wouldn't adopt there. They wouldn't foster. They wouldn't give away their children for adoption. But they were taken away against their will. So only now the government is talking about releasing the files. About time, you know, many years later. Yes,
go on. You've been talking about King David and Absalom. And you talked about that King David did not recommend his children. Was that because he loved them or because he didn't love them enough?
I'll tell you, it's very hard to reprimand your child because we said it's like you want your child to love you. So that's the problem people have today. I want my child to love me. If I am too tough with my child will growing up think, I don't love my father because he's too tough with me. But they don't realize the toughness is for their own benefit. That's the only trouble. So David, either he couldn't take that. Listen, it takes a lot of self-control. It takes a lot of willpower to be able to say, I need to talk to this child and talk to them now. Be tough with them now. It's very hard to do that. Because it's not a boss employee situation where you can always fire the employee. It's a child situation where you want that child to hang around you as well. We find Yaakov Avinu, who was the best person at raising children? Yaakov Avinu. How do we know he was the best? Because they all turned out okay. That's the bottom line. If you see the children turn out okay, you must be good parents. Must be. That's the bottom line. How are you going to judge this? It's very hard to judge. So it takes a while to judge. Are you a good parent? Well, I'll only know when the child's 25 and happily married with children. Then it means I'm a good parent. One second. Let me just finish this thought. I already forgot what I've talked to you. Okay, so David HaMelech, let's go back to David HaMelech. It's very, very hard. It says there's a balance over here. When do you rebuke? When do you not rebuke? Yaakov Avinu, who is the best child raiser in the whole Chumash, he rebuked his children on his deathbed. In other words, Rashi says over there a very interesting thing. Obviously, you have to rebuke them up to a point, but you can't really tell them what you really think about them, because then Rashi says they will leave you and not come back to you. And that's the fear. The fear of a parent is, so you can rebuke them, yes. When they're young, Avshalom was already 38 years old. Right, what are you going to tell him? He's already an old man. He'll say, heck with you, I'll run away. And that's what he did, in fact. He ran away anyway, right? First time he ran away, and then he had to go bring him back. Yoav went and brought him back. I just want to finish off. So that's the idea. The idea is, right, rebuke is when they're young. How young? Today it's getting younger and younger, because then they have big memories, right? If you smack a kid under the age of 3, that's the best time to smack them. Because if they're over 3, they're going to remember all their life, my father smacked me and I hate my father. Horrible. I still remember my father, Wolf. I'm trying to forgive him. No, forgive him. He's my father. Yes, go ahead. Yes, and he didn't say a word.
I thought Yaakov was criticized for not rebuking Yosef when he revealed the dreams.
He did. He told him a very veiled rebuke. Me and your mother are going to bow down to you. That's the way he rebuked him.
And the brothers still hated Yosef.
They hated him because he was
a big mistake.
They felt, well, the Ketoret Pasim was one of the big mistakes. But even then, you know what? Listen, he's a human being as well. But all being the best parent as well, best parenting skills. Listen, don't forget, Yosef's mother passed away. Yosef was an orphan. How do you make up for being an orphan? And that's something he could explain to the other kids. Listen, he's an orphan. That's why I gave him more time. And that's something we have to do if a child's a special needs child. You know, and the other kids saying, hey, how can I spend so much time with the kid? You have to explain to them, this child needs more time. You didn't need so much time, but that's the reason. It's not because I love him more. So maybe he didn't say those words, but that's what he meant. He meant, listen, that child, he's lost his mother, and I've got to be his father and his mother. That's what he should have said. Sorry, go ahead. But in the end result was, the end result, that's what we go by. We go by the end result. Life is a long, long process. To grow up is a long process. So the education, look at Yosef. Yosef is out there in Egypt, right? He wants to sin with Potiphar's wife. The rabbis say he wanted to sin. He nearly sinned with Potiphar's wife. What stopped him? He saw the face of his father. That's education. And when the child's not there, they think, what would my father do? What would my mother do? What would my mother say? What would my father say? Today, you just send an email.
We all want what appear to be righteous families with a lot of children. And sometimes there's one or two off the derrick. So that really doesn't apply, what you're saying.
What doesn't apply?
Well,
sure it applies.
Depends.
Were they successful? No.
Came out well, but there was one or two off.
It's not success. That's not success. Yaakov Avinu was 100% success.
So it's only...
Today, if you get 80%, 90%, okay, it's all numbers. But you know what? Even there's hope. Well, there's life, there's hope. They may come back, and usually they come back.
So then the parents failed as parents because one went off the derrick.
Yeah, 100%. It failed. It's a failure. It's a failure rate. The failure rate was whatever percentages. Today it's like failure rates. It's a statistic. So it's not 100%. They don't have 100% success.
The best parents in the world that have a child with the genetics.
That's something else. I'm not talking about genetics.
Or whatever it is.
That's something else.
You're
right.
They're just not.
Sometimes if it's not genetical, and even genetic, sometimes
we. Usually, when you have a big family, what she's describing, with one or two that just don't turn out the way they should, for whatever reason, and you've got maybe seven that did, it's because there's something genetically with that.
Listen, everything is genetics. So kleptomania is allowed then.
You're saying
kleptomania is allowed.
I'm not saying.
I'm just saying that. Depends what it is.
They could be the best parents in the world and...
These things happen.
This child was very difficult, like born very difficult from day one. You know what I'm saying? Like they're born a certain way.
That's not the parent's fault necessarily.
Right. Well, I don't know. You know, had a 50%.
I think we don't know.
I know. It's true. So do Yitzhak. Abraham, Yitzhak.
Of course, it's only because they only had two children each. You don't know necessarily if they would have had 10.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's very hard.
Maybe 9 out of them would have been fine, you know? You can't blame the parents on...
You can't blame parents? Okay. You're off the hook. Everyone's off the hook. That's America. It's America. Everyone's okay.
Rabbi, but
No, if they had 100%.
Listen, listen. All I can say, is, if the parents did their best, you can't blame parents. If the parents did their best, but parents have a large responsibility. Yes, go ahead.
I told the secular.
Here is the best raising a child. Yeah, very successful.
Today he would even have a classification. At that time, they didn't know yet, and he had been on some medication, and the doctor had taken him off. When he was ready for high school, and we sent him to the Yeshiva High School, and we had the parent orientation, I said to the secular coordinator, I don't care what he learns or doesn't learn. I care about his character.
Very good.
And that's all that I care about.
Hear that? That is a parent.
And
that's a good parent.
Was a... Four minus, the brightest of all three of my children. He's a very successful person today. He's a
Rabban
and he's a businessman.
Baruch Hashem.
But he's a decent, honorable youth.
That's the main person.
That's
all
I cared about.
That's right. So unfortunately.
But that was my reward.
Yeah, unfortunately.
He worked very hard on it.
Yeah. Anyway. So as long as the parents try their best. And
some parents think they tried the best, but they didn't.
It's very hard. It's very hard. It's a very hard thing. Because parents, they don't have the time. We don't have the time. And even when we do have the time, we don't have the time. Because we're busy with our own little stupidities. Let's go. Okay. So, love. It's the second level is love. And we're going to stop over here because we're on the second level. And that's a very interesting level. We're going to come back to it. What is love? What is a fake love? I'll give you an idea. It's the Greek idea of love. Fake love is the Greek idea of love of Cupid. Stupid Cupid. Okay.
I'm not saying that the parents have no responsibility or no obligation. I mean, if you have 100%